In the studio this morning, I have Pete Russell from Waiheke Island, and later on in the program, I will also speak with James Samuel by phone. He too is from Waiheke Island, was an early involver of Transition Towns. In the studio this morning, I have Pete Russell. He is the inspiration behind Ubi, Out of Our Own Backyards. OOOOBY.org. So, kia ora and welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you, Tim.
Peter, New Zealand is the startup place for Ubi. Could you explain to the listeners what Ubi is?
Yes, Ubi is an acronym for Out of Our Own Backyards. So it's four O's, BY.org. And it started with a realization that our food systems around the world, our global food systems, are actually quite precarious. And that's my background. My business in Australia 2 years ago, or just over 2 years ago, I was living and doing business in Australia in the globalized corporate food system. When I came to New Zealand, it was the Kiwis that got me to see the impacts of the sort of business that I was doing. And I really started to understand that we needed to revert back. Well, not so much revert back, but we needed to rebuild our local food systems, because they are the systems that have been decimated over the last 50 to 60 years.
And so what you've done, you've gone in and you've gone real, real local, like open your back door and walk out into your yard.
Absolutely. We've gone to the antithesis of what I was doing before. Before, we were shipping frozen food product from Europe on shipping containers across the ocean to Australia, keeping them frozen the whole time, shipping them from there into massive warehouses, freezer warehouses, where they'd get moved again into smaller freezer warehouses, where they'd get moved again into smaller freezers in supermarkets and petrol stations and the like, where they'd finally be then baked off and then sold to the consumer. And it was a great business for making money. Ubi, on the other hand, is the antithesis of that. We've gone as far away from that extreme as we possibly can and said, well, what's the antithesis? And the antithesis is eating food which you've grown in your very own backyard, homegrown food. My granny used to say, when we sit down for dinner, she'd say, oh, this tomato is OOTG, out of the garden. And that's where the name Ubi was inspired from. My wife actually came up with the name itself, but it was inspired from that whole idea that the best food is actually out of our own backyard.
And, of course, you started off in Waiheke Island.
Yep.
And what's happened since?
Well, we started 22 months ago on Waiheke Island, and within a few weeks we had over 100 members. Now, within 22 months, we have over 3,000 members. And most of those members are around New Zealand. In fact, by far the majority is in New Zealand. And the greatest density of those members is in Auckland. But we also have members from Australia, the United Kingdom, the United States, France, Belgium, and a lot of other countries around the world.
So how do you get people to become aware and be involved in locally produced food and what you do with this food?
We don't actually do much to get people to become aware. My focus has been on supporting and helping the people who are already involved to make the social network more valuable to them. And then it's been word of mouth. It's really spread under the radar in terms of we've done none of the above-the-line marketing activities that people do or organisations do to make their ideas spread. It's been a purely viral approach. I have to say, I have spent under $1,000 dabbling around with Facebook ads, but that was a while ago, and it did have a little bit of an impact on the number of members that joined. But by far the majority have come on board because of they've heard it from another friend, someone else who grows food and has got value out of being involved in the Ubi social network. And it's spread that way. The other way has been that we've been very fortunate in that local media have picked up and talked about it because it's an interesting story.
So the vision, what is the vision?
Local food everywhere.
Local food everywhere. And, of course, through this network, you're bringing people together so that they can just start off wherever globally. And you're, in particular, working towards little localized markets too. How does that work?
That's right. So the idea is something that we can be applied anywhere, and we're really focusing on building the very first prototype of a local food system here in Auckland. So to begin with, first you need to find the people who grow food. in a local region. And that's how we got started with the social network. And we were inviting people to become involved, and the people who were involved, we were inviting more people to become involved. The next step was to connect those people, and that's what the social network does. It connects them. So together, these people who are growing food now are talking to each other where they weren't before. They're learning so much about the local climate and ways of dealing with local issues with when it comes to growing food. The third step is to then start trading with these people and getting them to realize that, hey, you have the right and you are just as capable as anyone else to be able to provide people with food. And so we set up a 12 months ago, we set up a stall at the Graylin Farmers Market, which effectively represents locally grown food on a market stall and then makes that available for the public to purchase. It also facilitates trade between growers. So what happens is that first thing in the morning you'll get, well, we have up to 50 gardeners now who bring their food down to the stall. Not all on the same day, but from time to time. We're usually between 10 and 12 or so turn up on a day. They all trade and barter their food between themselves using a point system we call rubies. And then what they don't buy and what they don't buy off each other is then left on the stall, which is plenty, and sold to the public. And so now we've found a channel to market for locally grown, homegrown food. So it's early days, but it's the beginning, and we're noticing that we are actually able to access food that's grown in the local area and deliver it to people in a form where they can then take it home, cook it up, and eat delicious ubi meals.
And the food, is it all organic, or will they say spray-free? How do they clarify what this food is?
They tell us. We have a protocol, so to speak, where the food on the stall has a story behind it. And we say who grew the food, where they grew it, and how they grew it. So you know what you're buying. You know that Sally grew that tomato. You know that she grew it in Titirangi. And you know that she's self-certified organic, meaning that she has told us that she doesn't use any sprays or anything like that on there. Now, if we were getting our bananas out of Ecuador and we're told, oh, it's organic, it's like, but it's not certified by some other body, well, what are we going to do about it? We don't know. But with Sally, she's just down the road. If we want to, we can ask her and she's local. So there's more trust there. And it's her reputation that's on the line. So we basically just say it's up to the grower to tell us how they grow their food, and we will then pass that information on. So we'd have people who are organically certified. We have people who are Demeter certified, Biodynamics. We have people who are self-certified, who they say, I'm not going to go and I can't afford to go and get my certification and all those sorts of things, but I can tell you, looking straight in the eye, that my food does not have sprays and things like that on it. We have people who use a little bit of sprays and they tell us what they use. Okay, we're not purists in the sense of we only do organic. What we are focusing on is easy access to local food. And then we can work with these growers to help them move towards more and more organic methods. But it's the local aspect. It's the local food systems where it's the highest priority is.
Can I at this moment just throw in, can you name some of the foods that the big growers at the moment, bearing in mind that winter is a time when you've got a lot of brassicas and spinach and silver beet, whereas as we move towards summer, we're going to have beans coming on, peas, sweet corn, etc., and tomatoes, but essentially all the basics.
Yeah, well, we have got, if you go to the ubi stall at the farmers market on Sunday morning at the Graylin Community Centre, you'll see that every week we have quite a diverse array of food. At the moment, yes, we have beans coming on, we've still got all the brassicas. What else do we have? I think I saw Jerusalem artichokes there. We have other artichokes coming on. Artichokes coming to this is where my ignorance is really coming up. I'm actually not a gardener or food grower myself, and I'm quite ignorant in the company of oobsters because I'm an entrepreneur. My background is food and business systems, so I'm really learning a lot, and I'm just learning through observation. But I can tell you that there is definitely a diverse array of food available at the stall. And this is one of the things, though, ubi food is seasonal food.
Which means it's fresh all the time and it's most probably half a day old.
Absolutely. The concept behind ubi is all about shortening the supply chain. See, the current way that we buy food is through these very long-distance supply chains. Even if you buy food in your local progressive store or your local supermarket that may have been grown not too far from that store, it more than likely has been moved a long distance to be processed and handled and double handled and triple handled before it's come back to that store, purely because that's the way the distribution systems are set up. The distribution systems are national and international systems. So even local food isn't local anymore once it's gone through that. Plus, it's had its costs added to it at every junction. Now, every junction there is a service or some kind of labour or something applied to it, which is a cost and a ticket being clipped. The UBI system is about saying, no, we're not going to go through those existing channels. We're going to rebuild direct channels. So it comes out of the garden, it comes to the UBI stall, and it lands in your kitchen when you take it home. It's a single link supply chain. And the benefit of that is it's very short in distance and also in time. So typically the food that lands on the UBI stall on a Sunday morning was picked on Sunday morning by the gardeners. They got up at 6 in the morning, they went out, they picked it right at the right time when it should be picked in the early morning, and it's on the stall a few hours later, and it's in your kitchen a few hours later. Sometimes it's in your kitchen the same morning that it was picked and eaten that afternoon or that lunch.
Healthy people. Wonderful. That's excellent. Now, you're using the web really as one of the main drivers as well.
Yep.
And you have two different websites. You've got a social website and then you've got a marketing website. Is that marketing?
What we have is at ubi.org. We have just launched what I like to call the action end of UBI. And that is where you or anyone within the Auckland region at the moment can actually get local food delivered to your door. And it's called the UBI box. If you go to ubi.org, you will see that you can actually have a box of local food delivered to your door once a week. The way we do that is that we are accessing food that has been grown by growers who are part of the social network. And the social network, there's a link in the top right-hand corner of ubi.org that says UBI social network or social network or something like that. And that's when you click in there, that's when you go to the website, which is like it's a Facebook for food growers. And there's over 3,000 members on there. And they're all talking to each other and communicating with each other. And it's from that group of growers that we source our food. We also source our food in the beginning at the moment. We're also sourcing our food from existing local farmers that might not be tech savvy, so they might not be on in that social network itself, but they still fall within the criteria of what is local food. And so we are sourcing our food from, we've got food coming from Kumu, from Pukekohe, from Titirangi and so forth. It's about no more than a 100-kilometre radius of Auckland. So what we're doing is we're doing a lot more than just talking about it. We're really engaging it and we're really building a food system because we know that people aren't going to eat local food if it's hard to get. Our job is to provide easy access to local food.
And at a very affordable price.
Well, we cut a lot of the supply chain costs out of the food. So it's actually the growers are getting paid. We pay the growers more, a lot more than the standard mainstream food systems pay growers. Standard mainstream food systems at the moment are paying growers around about 20% of the retail value to as low as 5% in some cases. It's ridiculous. Sometimes it goes more than 20%. Sometimes it's up to 30%. We pay our growers at least 50%, okay? Sometimes more than 50%, sometimes up to 60%. So that means that the grower is still getting paid decent prices, but because we don't have a fat supply chain cost, we've got a very lean supply chain cost, the customer is not paying exorbitant prices, okay? We keep the price of the product at the retail point quite low. But we can only do that because we're doing it direct. The existing supermarket or mainstream food system, it can't do that. It can't provide you that service because it's a very costly operation to move things around all those distances and to handle and double handle and triple handle.
So this is people power coming in a whole new urban environment. This is a whole shift, really, to get people to be involved, knowing exactly what they're going to be able to put down their throat, feed their children. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit more about your social website, the page, because there's a lot of information in there, isn't there?
There is tons of information in there. What it is, it's a mix of, there's blogs on there. For people who aren't familiar with blogs, are weblogs, but effectively they're articles that people write themselves. And there is, I think there's over 500, it's probably close to 1,000 blogs on there now, with different topics and the like. We also have groups, and the groups are fantastic. So you've got groups like Poultry in Urbania, okay, and that's for people who have chooks in their backyard. And that's a fantastic group. There's a few, it is possibly over 100 people in that group. From the top of my mind, I can't recall. We've got the Food Growing Questions and Answers group, and that's a group with well over 100 people in it. And that's where, if you've got any question about what's going on in your garden or how to start or what this bug is or anything, you just drop a question onto the Food Growing Questions and Answers group, and somebody will come back and answer you. It's different to Googling, because when you Google something, you get static information that was already there. When you Ubi something, you get new, fresh information that's specifically answering your question. And these people are lovely. Their Ubi members are the sweetest people. I have never had to ban anyone for foul language, for being rude in any way. They are the most courteous, well-mannered, kind and sweet people you could ever come across on an internet social network.
Yeah, this is lovely to hear, because we need to have an example of something's happening, and that children, and particularly teenagers, can just hear that, oh, this is what's happening.
Absolutely.
Okay, it basically sets a good example for children to be involved.
Absolutely.
Yes. Two websites you've got are?
Well, it's ubi.org is the main website. And if you go to ubi.org, you will see, you can click through to the social network. That's really the only one you really need to remember, is ooby.org. Or just Google. Just go to Google and just Google Ubi, OOOBY, and it'll come up. It'll be very easy to find. It's an acronym for Out of Our Own Backyards.
And it's a New Zealand first.
It's a New Zealand first. Being an Aussie, I'd love to say it was an Australian first, but it's not. It was born and bred on Waiheke Island.
Excellent. I'm speaking with Pete Russell on Ubi, on how we as a community, large or small, can come together, share our food, and particularly produce it when we open the back door of our house, there in our yard. There is our resource base to build on.
Yeah, I think it's also largely about together solving a problem. You know, problem that we have with our food systems is that it's organized by a very small group of people relative to the amount of people who eat the food, okay? The reason that the food system has been able to be organized is because, in this way, is because as consumers, we're not connected. We don't work with each other peer-to-peer. We are too busy focusing on our day-to-day work, and we leave the food up to the experts. But we're finding that the food that we're getting from the experts is slowly and progressively, gradually just becoming less trustworthy, less nutritious, quite costly, full of a lot of refined foods, and it's costly in the sense of its value. You're paying a lot for what you get. Sometimes you think, oh, no, the supermarkets, it's very cheap food. Yeah, but it is super, super cheap in terms of its actual value as well. And you're paying a lot more than it's real worth. But we haven't really been able to do anything about that because we haven't been able to get organized. The beauty at the moment is that we have technology, and that technology is what connects us peer-to-peer. It's the social network is allowing us to get coordinated, to get together and together work towards providing a new option, a new alternative for getting food. If it wasn't for the technology and the ability to connect people, then I don't think we'd really have a chance. But it's because of the internet and because of the connections that are being made there that we're able to coordinate and get organized. I remember James Samuel told me once that when the British had rule in India, there was one Brit to as many as 300,000 Indians, yet the British still had rule. And the difference was that they were organized, whereas the masses in India weren't organized. And it was only when Gandhi had a unifying idea and was able to bring those people together and galvanize them together around a unifying idea that they were able to overthrow that power. In the same way, you know, this idea that we can feed ourselves, right, it just takes being connected and being unified. We can, without question, we can rebuild our food systems in a way that it's ours. Food isn't something that should be owned by a minority of the population. Food is something, that's a fundamental right. And We need to be able to feed ourselves. And we can only do it if we're working together. And so this is what it's about. It's about reconnecting and realizing, hey, it's not as hard as we thought it was. But it is if you're trying to do it on your own. So food first. That's a feeling for me. It's like of all the different things to be focusing on, you've got your environment and you've got your economic issues and you've got your crime and your transport and all these different sorts of areas, which James and the transition towns are working on across all these areas to help to rebuild. Food is the one that we're focusing on, and food is, in my opinion, it's the foundation. If we can feed ourselves first, then we built the social infrastructure to be able to also handle a lot of those other problems.
And, of course, it's really the health aspect on top of that. Last night I was in the city and I thought, oh, gosh, I got a craving. I like chips, but I don't buy chips because I know that there's trans fats and it's basically fish and chips is a plate of free radicals. And so I held back and I got home and I went out in the garden and I picked at least 15 different greens and I made a salad. Mm. And I had such a broad spectrum of all these green leaf vegetables that I went to bed, my tummy wasn't bloated, and I know that that makes me so much healthier and you lose weight. I even hear now Bill Clinton, who was a Burger King man, he just ate burgers and burgers. He's gone on a vegan diet,
right,
and he's lost something like about 12 Ks, and he's so much more healthier. Yeah. And when people really take that jump and start producing their food or eating food that's really, really fresh, a whole new vitality comes in, doesn't it?
It does, indeed. In fact, I wish I was as disciplined as you, Tim, because when I get hungry, I want to eat now. And I'm the sort of person that is all good intentions. When I'm hungry, they kind of go out the window. And it's like, if there was a kebab there, let me buy it and let me eat it. And that's the key. I'm one of these people that needs convenience. And that's what Ubi's about. It's about making local, fresh food easy. Easy to get. You know, the Ubi box is local food at the click of a button. So that you don't have to go out and work and tramp the footpath looking for local food. It's about bringing it into your life in as easy a way as possible. You know, once we build these networks together and once we build a renewed distribution system, local food should be as easy and convenient as getting a can of Coke. And if it is, you think about this, if local food is at in arm's reach and is easy and convenient, it's going to be a lot easier to be healthy, a lot easier to start to make the choices that are going to make a difference to our local economy, right, to our local environment, and to our own personal health. But until local food is convenient, it's going to be on the fringes. It's going to be the people who've got the discipline to actually make those choices in the face of being hungry now but not being able to eat until they get home and into their own garden. And that's what I'm working on. It's what I think is really, really key is we've got to make it easy. We've got to make it convenient. And then we can see a real shift.
So everybody, start talking to your neighbours. Wherever you can, keep talking. And particularly, have people around for a meal at your place and wherever you are, if you drink coffee at a lounge somewhere. Now, New Zealand, of course, we see it as land of milk and honey. And I know I come from a farm down in the Waikato, and Dad used to bring a bucket of milk back from the cowshed. And, of course, we never had pasteurised milk. We never had homogenised milk. We just drank freely from this bucket once we put it in the fridge. Is the ability for milk to come through the Ubi system, as well as honey, of course? Yeah, as you said, there's, I think, 107 people involved in honey and bees.
In the bees group, yeah. The bees group is a buzzing group.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, look, you know, that's the beauty about it, is that there's no controls over the Ubi social network in that regard. I definitely am aware of some groups of people who've got together to buy a cow and are enjoying their own milk. And that's being coordinated on Ubi, and that network has facilitated that. Yes, and also definitely beyond the fresh fruit and veg, there is honey, there is eggs, there is meats. And find people on Ubi who will be able to do some kind of over-the-back fence sort of trade with meats as well. And then, of course, you've got all your baked goods, your jams, your preserves, your look, it just goes on and on and on. There's pretty much nothing in your pantry that you've got now that you wouldn't be able to find a replacement for that could be produced within your own backyard or within your local area. We really do have the capability to provide ourselves with such a diverse array of foods.
I'm speaking with Pete Russell regarding localized food production and sharing it in the community. At present, you've got some important initiatives that you're working to really get people more involved. Yep. What are they, Peter?
The initiative that we're really focused on at the moment is the Ubi Box. The Ubi Box is a way that you can get local food dropped on your doorstep. We want to make it easy, so it's a click of a button. We're just launching it this month, and it's $22.90, and you basically get a slice of farmer's market, okay, local food on your doorstep every week. What that does is it gives you local food. More importantly, it starts to provide an income and rebuilds the viability of local growers. The local growers at the moment, it's been depressing. I've been on the phone and talking to farmers around this local area. Every year has been worse and worse and worse for them. As the large corporate food giants have been taking more and more and more of the market share, these local growers have just been having a harder and harder time every year. And they're just worn out. They're on their last legs. And this is an opportunity for us to be able to say, hang on a minute, let's support these guys. Let's buy from these guys. Because when you buy an Ubi Box, these guys get paid a decent amount. They get paid more. They get paid more than they would get paid if they were to sell it to the supermarkets. And you don't necessarily pay that much more because you're not paying for all that supply chain cost. So it's a two-way thing. Yeah, it's good for you, and it's really good for our local food production and supporting and bolstering up our local food production. And then you've got the opportunity for the kids who are coming out of school or for the children of the local farmers to actually see, oh, wow, you know, we can really keep making a living doing this. We don't have to sell the farm to some lifestyler. We can actually continue the legacy that our family have been carrying on for generation after generation. It's really, we're coming to a point in time when if we don't do something, it'll just fizzle out and it'll just be one of those historical things. But we're not there yet. It hasn't fizzled out. There are growers out there. There are new growers who are waiting in the wings if the demand is there. We've got to do that. It's up to us. It's up to you to make a choice and say, okay, I'll support. I'll put $22 or $23 of my shopping budget towards local. I'll get that box on my doorstep. I'll keep going down to the supermarket for now and get the other things that I need. But I know that I'm making my contribution. I know that part of my shopping bill is supporting local growers and that from there, more things can grow, more things can become available.
Because the next step it takes me to is recipes.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, this is a really exciting thing. One of the wonderful things we have is Christy, who runs the Ubi stall at the Greylin Farmers Market. Her partner, Julio, is a top-notch chef. And he is going to be writing recipes up for us. He works at Kermadec. He's one of the chefs there, but he has a real love for cooking food from the garden. He's just a fantastic chef, and he's really excited about coming up with some wonderful recipes for what goes in the box for that week. So you're not only going to get good local food, which you can trust and you can understand the backstory behind, you'll also be getting a recipe or a couple of recipes of what you can do with it, and not just your standard recipes. You'll be able to see some wonderful things you can do with local food.
But there are also many recipes on the website too, isn't there?
Oh, there is. There is. In fact, there's a group on the website called Seasonal Recipes, and that's where everyone shares their recipes. They harvest something from their garden, they go inside, they cook it up, and they write it out, and they take photos and pop it up there, and you can see what people have been doing. And they're seasonal. They're seasonal recipes, and they're, a lot of the time they're original, very original recipes. Sometimes they're very traditional family recipes that have been passed on and pulled out of their grandmother's scrapbook. But yeah, it's a great way of sharing recipes, and there are plenty on there.
My first picture on Ubi was a plate of food that I'd prepared.
Right, yeah.
Yes, excellent. Pete, what's in the box?
Good question. Yeah. To begin with, will be locally grown fruit and veg. Okay, it'll be a variety of fruit and veg that's in season. But really, there's so much more in the box than that. That's just the start. And let me explain to you what is the box. The box is, there's actually three boxes. There's the big box, the middle-sized box, and the little box. And the little box is what lands on your doorstep. Now, at the very start, for our first launch, we're just going to be using cardboard boxes, okay, because we're really wanting to make sure that we're not over-investing in infrastructure. We're wanting to test our systems first. And once we've tested our systems and we've really identified the right shape and size and all those sorts of things, we then can start to build a packaging-free system. So to begin with, we'll be using cardboard boxes, but very soon we're going to be bringing these timber, flat-pack timber boxes, which means that no more throwing away packaging, completely package-free food. And these timber boxes, the moment we've designed them as they're a 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot square box, and they're a flat-pack timber box where the bottom of them pops up and the walls all slot together, and that's something that will be like a milk run. You leave your bottles on the doorstep. It's something that stays in the system, okay? So we deliver food on your doorstep in these nice timber boxes, and then the following week, you leave your box on the doorstep, we deliver a new box, and in and out they go. And so to begin with, fruit and veg in there. Now, that's the little box. The big box is the exciting part, in my opinion anyway, being a entrepreneurial kind of innovative sort of thinker. The big box is actually a shipping container. Right. Now, the shipping container is really exciting because the shipping container is, that's the globalized food system's infrastructure. That's a building block for the globalized food system. These things get moved around the world willingly all over the place. Well, we're taking one and we're putting it in one spot and it's staying there. And it's going on a local piece of land within, in this case, it'll be in Grey Lynn. And we're putting it there and it ain't moving, right? Unless it's going to go to another local area. Okay, and it becomes the building block for a sorting hub, the sorting and distribution hub, okay, so that we can actually build a local food hub out of shipping containers. So we're recycling old materials and we're actually pulling those materials out of the globalized food system and utilizing them for local food systems. Okay, and then the middle-sized box is a van, okay, that where we basically take the food from farms go into the shipping container, then in the shipping container they get sorted into little boxes, and then we take the little boxes to the houses. It's a bit of a story to it, but the little box to begin with will be fruit and veg. But after that, what else could there be? Well, could be seedlings. Why not have seedlings delivered to your door in the box? And seeds. And then if these boxes are moving around the neighbourhood, they could be a way, they could be a pipeline effectively for all sorts of local goods and services. So you know, your imagination starts to wind and think, if we had a localized distribution system that's used primarily for food but could be used for other things, what could be done? Compost? You know? What if we were to be able to pick up your kitchen waste compost when we're delivering? Okay, and we would be able to bring that back and then put it into worm farms back at the box and then turn that into castings and like, and then jar that, bottle that up and then be redistributed. What if we could use this distribution, this box system to literally close the loop so that we can get a complete cycle going on in a local system? That's the vision. The vision is that we can be community sufficient. You've heard the term self-sufficient? Well, I think self-sufficiency, you know, it's good, but community sufficiency, that's a whole different level of sufficiency. That's where you still get to enjoy so many of the beautiful parts of life.
Goodwill of your neighbours.
The goodwill of your neighbours.
The joy of sharing. And
I would rather be community sufficient than self-sufficient.
Yes.
You know, personally, I still want that whole experience of a good communal life. And it's not community as in alternative way of life. It's community in the sense of family and friends and neighbours who connect with each other and help each other and support each other and lift the quality of life for each other.
In an elegant way.
in an elegant way. And I think that's a real key to it. It is an elegant way. And we're not doing this. We're doing this with a level of elegance with Ubi as well, because food is cuisine. Food isn't about stuffing our bellies. Food is about enjoying one of the most primal pleasures of life. And that when you do it with a bit of elegance, it just lifts the whole game.
Pete, in finalising, what is your message for the listeners at this moment?
I'd just say engage, participate, get involved. Check out, go to the website and see what it says to you. Okay, see what it means to you and think about how can I participate? Could I just buy a box to begin with? Could I start buying and eating local food? Or could I start providing for the box? If you've got a bit of a green thumb, why not start supplying the box and making a little bit of extra on the side for yourself? Okay, or could I start helping someone who is providing for the box? Or whatever comes to mind, just participate. Just get your head around it a little bit, because I think that once you get in there, there's lots of seeds. There's lots of seeds of thoughts and ideas that are surrounding Ubi. And it would just be wonderful if it could just spark something and something can grow in your own life around it.
Empowering the neighbourhood to share and communicate and eat and enjoy.
Exactly.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Pete.
You're welcome, Tim.
Pete, you had a little instance here where you stopped for a second and you said you had a deja vu just a few seconds ago during the interview.
Yeah, well, when we had a little break, we were talking about, because James Samuel was meant to be here today in the studio and wasn't able to make it, and we were talking about how we could reschedule James in, and there it was, a deja vu, a really intense one, where it just felt like I have definitely been here having this conversation with you before.
Well, this is the key to it, is if we can all have deja vus every day, we'd all know that we were in alignment, particularly if we're doing good things, things that are going to benefit the whole, going to benefit the community. We know that there's a spiritual overview or quality coming through.
It feels that way.
Excellent. Thank you, Pete. Good on you, man. You're right in tune.
Thank you, Tim.
Lovely.
Cheers, mate.
That was Pete Russell talking on Ubi, out of our own backyards. org. On the phone from Waiheke Island, I have James Samuel, who has been involved with both Transition Towns and Out of Our Own Backyards. So kia ora, and thank you for coming on to the show, James.
Kia ora, Tim, and thank you for all the fine work that you're doing.
Thanks, James. James, what is your overview of how you see Out of Our Backyards and, in general, the revolution for people going back and gardening and producing their own food?
Thanks, Tim. Well, I think that the food revolution is one aspect of a greater change that is taking place all over the world. It's being pushed on the one hand by pressures in terms of resource availability and becoming more and more challenged because of increasing numbers and less resource ease of availability. And it's one of the first and obvious ones that people naturally gravitate towards because, okay, we can breathe, we can generally get access to water for at least most of us, although that's becoming challenging for many people in the world today. Food is the next obvious one that has undergone a major transformation, particularly over the last 50 years. It's become an incredibly industrial process and a globalized process. And I think whether or not people are necessarily conscious of it, I think there's sort of an underlying intuitive sense that our food system, the way that we've become used to it over the last 50 years, is not sustainable for many reasons, for reasons of energy required to actually keep it going, but also being dissociated from the source of our food means that we no longer have any sense of control over the quality of it either. We don't know how it's being grown, under what conditions, and not only the conditions in terms of the chemicals that have been used to grow it, but also the conditions that people who are growing the food are having to put up with. So to bring food back into our local sphere seems like a very natural thing to do and an obvious thing to do. But I see that food revolution, which is, with just a little bit of Googling, a little bit of searching under tags like local food or locavore and things like that, will reveal that there's an enormous amount of activity just bubbling up everywhere, and some very interesting initiatives that are helping to bring food back into the local sphere again. But I see that as part of the entire relocalization movement. And if you need an example of the phenomenal growth that the relocalization movement is going through, you only have to look at the number of transition towns that have grown up over the last 4 years since it was first born in Totnes in Devon. I think on last count there was 316 official transition towns as at the middle of October, and that number is increasing all the time. And then there's all of the other ones which aren't official, and New Zealand is in particularly a place where we're not really into the official transition town title so much, and there's about 50 transition initiatives all over the country at the moment, and that's all grown over the last 3 years. So I see that there is a quiet revolution underway, that people are turning from being incredibly self-focused, focused only in short-term results, and particularly focused in and responding to the kind of the profit motive, to more of an awareness that we're all in this together, that we're all in the same boat, we're all going to be affected by the changes that are happening all around us, and that we actually need one another, and it's not going to work to be so independent anymore. And I think that's starting to become more and more apparent, and I think it's built up specifically because of the abundance of cheap energy. You know, we've come to this point where we haven't even had to know our neighbors. You know, I mean, if you talk 50, 60 years ago, we probably would not have thought twice about going around to the neighbor and borrowing a cup of sugar or a few eggs or something, but we haven't needed to do that because we can jump in our car and go to the supermarket and access that food from the globalized food system. I think all of that is changing.
I agree.
How I see that change underway is that you have things now like the social business, the social enterprise model, and I bumped into somebody just a couple of days ago who went back to Berkeley, California recently to the second social enterprise conference. He'd been to one about 2 years earlier, which had been, there were about 500 participants in that one, and he went back 2 years later, just literally a few weeks ago. There were 2,000 people in attendance at the social enterprise conference, and these people were excited, they were active. This is the manifestation of those sorts of things that we're becoming quite familiar with now and that are part of our daily life, things like Wikipedia, for example, which is a tool where information is shared. Collaboration is a natural part of a process that enables us to access good quality information because of many, 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 many people contributing freely of their time. And social business is coming out of that space where people who have fantastic, amazing skills, who could be going off and getting really well-paying jobs, are saying, actually, no. Actually, I'm going to put my energy into creating a business which isn't just about profit for me or my bosses or the company I work for, but is benefiting the entire community and that takes into account the well-being of the entire planet and the entire ecosystem along the way. So this growing eco-literacy, this awareness that the way that we've been doing things is not sustainable. It's not serving the future well-being of ourselves or next generations. And I think this is the quiet revolution that's underway. And I just love this quote from Clay Shirky where he says, "A revolution doesn't happen when a society adopts new tools. It happens when a society adopts new behaviors." Which is kind of curious because, in a sense, we tend to look at the tools. You see the internet and we see Twitter and Facebook and you know, phenomenal growth in those areas. Facebook just hit 500 million users only a few weeks ago. That's 500 million people on the planet who are able to connect instantly with any one of the other 500 million people in that network. And yet the focus is not on the tools. The focus is on the change of behavior. And I certainly, what I'm noticing through Facebook is that people are having very different conversations, very different conversations than the ones that we were having 2, 3, or 4 years ago. And that excites me because that's about collaboration and innovation. And when people come together and share ideas and get inspired by the actions that each other are taking, then we can evolve and innovate these great initiatives to another level. And right now, you've caught me on a day where we're packing up the very first Ubi boxes for delivery out into the Auckland region, which is kind of a milestone moment and a really exciting one, because this is about taking responsibility for where our food comes from and the quality of that food and facilitating its distribution out into the local community.
Yeah, this is a real, real good one that you're doing it right now. And of course, it's spring, so the food's going into these boxes, and you've got your systems all laid out pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first one, and it's more about having fun and seeing how we can improve and become more efficient. But it's not, you know, the point is not sort of really to focus on the efficiency. That'll come in time, and the way that it's being set up in the future is that we'll have a shipping container that's our packing shed. And right now we're doing it in somebody's garage, which is perfect and entirely appropriate for something which is out of our own backyards. So this is really the Ubi beginning. Yeah.
Yes, to be able to get this happening right across the country, if you have a good system here in Auckland, of course, it's just replicatable.
Totally, and it's already been replicated. I don't know if Pete mentioned it, but in Ireland, about a year ago, they started an Ubi store. And then 2 or 3 weeks ago, they had been watching the development of the Ubi box, because we've been talking about it online, and quite without our knowing, they've started their own Ubi box system in this little town in Ireland. So I just can't help but feel that if we share the information about what's working and how we're doing it, and this is that whole open source model that's been demonstrated so well by software companies that like Wikipedia, like Firefox, that share information, say, here it is, these are the tools, we don't own it. You know, it's kind of absurd to think that anybody can have this absolutely original idea and then own it. How can we own an idea? We're not separate from one another in the first place, so it's absurd to take that stand and say, well, this is my intellectual property, you know. It's like, no, we are all part of the great human organism that is just one part of life on this planet. And the natural thing is for us to share that information, and everybody benefits from it. And this is why I believe that collaboration is a key to the necessary innovation that we need more and more in order to create the different kind of society, the healthy, vibrant, thriving society that we need as we go into a lower energy future.
James, thank you so much for sharing this, because this is where we are going. And I'd like to think that as New Zealand sees the international dateline first, that we see tomorrow first, that we are out there in the front leading. And I want to say thank you very much with what you're doing.
Yeah, well, thanks, Tim. And I mean, you know, it's always nice to have that sense that we're leading. But actually, I think we're all doing it, and all over the world people are doing it, and that's the beauty of it. And the fact that we can now share that information globally at the drop of a hat is just wonderful. And, you know, so people can evolve these things in their own place, in their own way, that what we're talking about is principles, not a prescription of how to do it. But here's some principles, and one of the principles is relocalization. Let's see how we can meet our needs within our local community in a way that is sustainable, that does regenerate our ecosystem and environment for future generations.
No separation. Excellent. Thank you so much, James.
My pleasure, Tim. Thank you.
That was James Samuel speaking on Ubi out of our own backyards. .org, and how we can produce locally grown food and get it to the community and their table on the same day, so that we are eating fresh, vital food. I would like to draw your attention to the Green Planet Earth Files. This is a section of this program that covers points of interest that you, as listeners, can become involved. This way, the Green Planet program can facilitate positive options to bring about reducing our ecological footprint, acting in truly sustainable ways, and work towards becoming more carbon neutral. transitiontowns.org.nz. As you will have heard, both Pete Russell and James Samuel talked of transition towns. This is a very good resource for New Zealanders who are aware of the transition through resource peaks, climate change, and economic crisis. If you go to transitiontowns.org.nz, you'll get an understanding of what Transition Towns is all about. You'll be able to find your local group and become involved, and you can read and share stories, news, and events. There is also a web blog where you can post comment, but very important, you can join. And if you are in an outlying town or urban area that does not have a group belonging to transitiontowns.org.nz, you can be the facilitator for a new Transition Town group in your area. What I like about Transition Towns, they are strategically thinking of the future of not only the community, the country, but particularly the children and grandchildren. So check out transitiontowns.org.nz. Those who are involved are very practical, and in being visionary, thinking of our collective future. That is Earth Files for this week. At 9:05 on Thursdays, this program is streamed from the Planet FM studios at planetaudio.org.nz, search green. Also, for iPod and streaming, it can be obtained 6 hours after broadcasting on greenplanetfm.com, holisticliving.co.nz, and itunes.com, search health. I thank you for tuning into greenplanetfm.com, broadcasting here in Auckland and streaming out from nuclear-free New Zealand around the curve in the southern hemisphere of our magnificent home planet. The premise for this program is to uplift and mobilize consciousness and the human spirit and discover what we can actively do at a grassroots level to promote positive and sustainable alternatives to life on Earth, particularly in the immediate environment that nourishes all of us. In doing so, I trust that you will find this program supportive and inspirational as we listen to leading-edge experts, practitioners in their field, and people who are living examples of well-being, optimism, and sustainability. From the latest environmental solutions to issues of well-being, community development, and consciousness, we take you through in-depth discussions and supplementary concepts rarely explored so comprehensively in mainstream media. Above all, we are an advocate for today's and tomorrow's children. When we consider our magnificent planet as a whole, we might realize that our perspective has only been informed and expanded for the first time since Galileo, when the Apollo space program in the 1960s took us to the moon and gave us the image of Earth floating alone in space. Now, as we pass beyond this first decade of the 21st century, humanity urgently needs to act with maturity, with easy access to knowledge and technology, and I trust deep wisdom. Will this new century mark our 21st birthday, a coming of age as an adult and mature civilization, being responsible, courageous, and compassionate, with insight, inclusiveness, and vision. For we are a young, recent, and supposedly evolving species physically on this Earth for less than 2 million years, at the evolving end of the long-term 4.5 billion-year scheme of things on this planet. However, we are now in rapid growth phase as a species that in the last 50 years is reaching exponential proportions. We are learning and experiencing far more and far faster than ever before. As this pace is quickening in complexity, there's a compelling need for simplicity and unity. All of us born here on Earth have a yearning to enjoy a life of love, full of experience and fun, with both wonder and insight being part of our everyday growth. Yet, as our planet enters a cycle of unknowing challenges, we need to look deeper at the essence of life and to question how we have arrived at this particular juncture. With breakthroughs in experimental exploration, research and knowledge, while drawing on our renewed sense of intuition, we are realizing that like our own physical body, humanity is a vast, interrelated superorganism. Furthermore, we are interwoven intimately with a colossal superorganism that is Gaia, planet Earth. This living planet has loaned us bodies in which we can co-evolve with her and co-create with each other. And so we live lightly embedded within this new paradigm, the unfolding of nature. Of all the times to be alive, this is the moment for us to accelerate our awakening and cooperate with our evolution. Let us access our latent virtues, which glow within us as subatomic energy bundles of luminescence. For we are far more than we ever thought possible. We are realizing that there is as much to know in the inner world as there is in the outer world. Never before in recorded history has such an opportunity been presented for humanity, both individually and en masse, to cross the threshold to the inner self. Can we now, at this moment, be present to our spiritual inheritance? Can we now take a leadership role in our local community while retaining our awareness of a larger global community and our destiny beyond? This is where we are at this instant. So thank you for tuning into this GreenPlanetFM.com program. I trust you feel empowered to make a difference, to play your part in this magnificent experiment called life, as it fulfills our purpose. I look forward to interviewing another insightful and perceptual practitioner next week. I wish you success in your work and your life, with your family and within your community. This is Tim Lynch, in the spirit of Aroha, south of the Tropic of Capricorn, saying bye-bye and haere rā.